From NPR and WBUR, I'm Robin Young.
I'm Jeremy Hobson. It's Here and Now. Coming up, the announcement from Apple's CEO that has nothing to do with iPhones and yet is reverberating around the business world.
But first, Maine nurse Casey Hickox remains in a standoff with that state over whether she should be quarantined. She has no symptoms of Ebola, says she's not a danger. But the state has asked a judge to require her to keep a distance of 3 feet from other people at all times and to ban her from public places. Her case has raised questions about quarantines, but we feel we still have questions about the disease. So we've called infectious disease specialist Ian Lipkin from Columbia University's Mailman School of Public Health. He recently held a contest challenging students to come up with ways to fight Ebola. He got brilliant suggestions. We'll have that story on Monday. But today are questions. For instance, we've heard in the past, the longer Ebola virus is in the bloodstream, the more virulent the virus is. And then this week, we heard another specialist, Dr. Kent Sepkowitz, say early in symptoms, the amount of virus that a person has is negligible. They are not contagious. It's only dying patients who are contagious. So, Dr. Lipkin, Ian, start there. Only dying patients are contagious. Is that true?
No, that's not true. The virus itself does not become more virulent. The virulence is an inherent property of the virus. What happens is that as the illness progresses, the amount of virus that's present in the body and in body fluids increases. And infection, the capacity to transmit infection, is a function of the amount of virus that's present. And that's why when somebody's in the early stages of infection, where there are very small amounts of virus in the body, you're much less likely to have transmission of the virus to another victim, that is to say, another human being. But there's plenty of virus when people are feeling quite ill that has the capacity to infect other people. And indeed, there has been evidence of transmission when even well before people die. But people do have to be sick. There is no evidence that virus can be transmitted in that period between the time someone's been exposed to the virus and the time they begin to show symptoms.
Well, and when people get sick, they get violently ill. So another question a lot of people have is, why didn't the family of Thomas Eric Duncan, the poor gentleman who died in Dallas, why didn't they contract Ebola? He was sweating in the apartment. He was sick in the apartment. They had to remove the toilet. He threw up right outside the apartment. So that would seem to be pretty violently ill. Why didn't they get sick?
Well, I would flip that question around and make the point that Ebola is not that infectious. What we've learned from that really is that unless you have direct contact with bodily fluids, you're not going to become infected with Ebola. And that's evidence that that's the case. These people were probably not immune to Ebola because they probably had not seen any virus like Ebola, but they simply didn't come into contact with these bodily fluids.
But staying with why the family of Mr. Duncan didn't contract Ebola, you mentioned in passing that they hadn't been in touch with the disease. I think you were alluding to that somebody who's had the disease, as we've seen, can build up antibodies, and then once they've survived it, those antibodies are in their blood and they can possibly help other people. But are people possibly born with antibodies? Can somebody just be immune to it?
I don't think there's any evidence that anybody that there's any such thing as inborn immunity to Ebola. We don't fully understand why some people survive and other people die. To some extent, this is a function of whether or not you get early care. And the only care we have at present that we know seems to be working is hydration and general support so that your kidneys and your liver and your brain don't shut down. But there may be people who have innate resistance to Ebola. We just don't know enough about that yet.
Right.
But I would be very surprised if that were the case with respect to this family. It's just more likely that they were cautious and did not come into contact with these fluids.
Right.
As you know, the discussions with them at the time that he went into the hospital suggested that they were concerned that he did have Ebola, even when he first went in. So I would expect that they would already have been taking precautions to prevent infection of themselves.
Right. Is it possible that there are certain Ebola cases that are less virulent? Or is the virus, no matter what, same strength? In other words, we saw some nurses thankfully recover. Is that because they got care sooner, do you think? Or is there a chance that there's just a weaker Ebola virus?
Well, there's no evidence that there's a weaker Ebola virus circulating in the community now. That doesn't mean that there isn't one. It's just that we don't have any evidence yet that that's the case.
Yeah.
The one factor that seems to be critically important is, you know, your underlying health and whether or not you get early support. One of the things that happens as people become ill once they develop diarrhea is that they have what's known as vascular collapse. Makes it very difficult to provide them with adequate hydration, and you begin to see early system failure. If your kidneys don't get enough blood, they stop functioning. That makes you ill. If your liver doesn't get enough blood, the same thing occurs. So it's important that as soon as we make a diagnosis of risk for Ebola, in the early stages when it's clear that somebody's going to need that kind of support, that we initiate that support immediately. And that's why the morbidity and mortality with Ebola in the developed world is much, much better than it is in the developing world, where you don't have access to this sort of support.
Dr. Ian Lipkin, thank you so much.
Appreciate the opportunity to talk to you.